I have betrayed innocent blood. Chapter 82. In the early morning, as the day is breaking in the east, the Sanhedrin comes together for the second time. They all are present. It seems as if some of the members of this Jewish council did not come that night. But now, in this early morning hour, and they all have come to the gathering. Jesus again is sentenced to death in this second gathering of the Sanhedrin. They all agree that this blasphemer, who dares say he is God's son, must be sentenced to death. Do they all agree? No, not everyone. Read what is recorded in Luke 23, verses 50 and 51. One of these counselors, Joseph of Arimathea, dares to say publicly that he does not agree with the verdict pronounced upon the Lord Jesus. He votes against it. Later you will hear more of this Joseph of Arimathea. And what do you think of Nicodemus? Nicodemus was also a member of the Sanhedrin. Did he too agree to sentence the Lord Jesus to death? I do not believe so. That is scarcely possible. Even if the Bible does not tell us about Nicodemus, it is highly probable that Nicodemus voted against it. But take heed, the Bible is silent about it. Whatever it may have been, nearly everyone demands the death of this hated Nazarene. Still, a great difficulty remained for the rulers of the Jews. The Jews may no longer execute the death sentence upon anyone. They first must ask the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. Pilate also must pronounce the verdict of death upon Jesus. Only then, and not before, can they kill him. Pilate is the Roman judge. There is nothing else for them to do but go to Pilate first. You can be sure this thought filled them with resentment. They hope Pilate will not inquire into the matter and quickly will give his consent. Then all will be ended before the people awaken in the morning. Yes, that would be fine. Then the thousands of Galileans no longer can help Jesus. They leave the hall of the high priest in the early morning hours and go to the palace of the Roman governor. All of them cannot go, and for a few must go to the temple to open the doors of the Lord's house. And they must get everything ready for the sacrifices which will be brought that day, because it will be a busy day. Come, in our thoughts, we first will go with the men who are going to the temple. The doors are opened, but as it is still very early in the morning, no offerers have come. All is quiet and peaceful. Suddenly, they raise their heads and listen. Quiet. They look at each other questioningly. Oh, what is it? They hear footsteps hastily approaching. Inquisitively, they look toward the place from where the noise comes. Soon a man appears who walks directly toward them. But oh, just see how strange he looks. His hair hangs disheveled before his face. His eyes look about shyly and nervously. His face is distorted from fear and remorse. The chief priests and elders look at him in utmost astonishment. What does this man want of them? What is he coming to do in the temple in this early morning hour? Who is this man? Ah, you know who he is, don't you? This man is Judas, the betrayer of the Lord Jesus. What brings him to the temple? Listen to what he says. I have sinned, in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. We read fear and despair in his eyes. Dreadful. But how did this come to pass so quickly? What happened? You know how in the Garden of Gethsemane he had given his master the kiss of betrayal with these words, "Hail, Master." We also told you Jesus answered him thus, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" "Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss?" Judas went back to Jerusalem with the multitude. There he received his betrayal wages, 30 pieces of silver. In our money, it is about $17. He was anxious to get this money. At first, it seemed so nice to him to receive such a sum. Besides, he could cool his hatred against this Jesus of Nazareth, who had, as he thought, deceived him. At least, these were his thoughts. But how strange. After he has the money, the joy of its possession disappears. He isn't as happy with it as he thought he would be. He begins to reflect on what he had done. All the things which happened during the past years of Jesus' sojourn upon the earth and which he witnessed come back plainly and vividly to his memory. He thinks about the miracles which Jesus performed and the words which he spoke. It is as if he still can hear his soft, kind voice. His conscience speaks. It accuses him. Jesus always was so good, so kind. Even in the garden, Jesus addressed him with the word "friend." He is reminded of everything clearly. He begins to realize Jesus knew what his plans were. The veiled warnings which were directed at him return to his memory. Oh, if he had not done it, he sees the ugliness, the falseness of his actions. Judas begins to be disturbed with these thoughts. They do not leave him with a moment's rest. He is filled with remorse because of his shameful betrayal. But no true upright sorrow fills his soul. He has no grief because he has love for Jesus as Peter had. He does not plead for forgiveness or bow before God. He had no humiliation of heart, which we found with Peter. We do not find this with Judas. With Judas, it is only remorse, regret. One thing he still hopes, and what is that? Probably Jesus will free himself, or probably they will not find anything and Jesus will be acquitted. The betrayer clings fast to these possibilities. You can be sure that for him the hours of this night crept forward slowly. A constant unrest overpowered him the entire night. Then he hears that the Sanhedrin had sentenced Jesus to death, for undoubtedly the betrayer did not remain in the judgment hall. However it may have been, Judas was informed of Jesus' death sentence. The Lord did not deliver himself. He could have done so, but did not want to. The last hope of Judas is dashed to the ground. Despair overpowers him. The money which he received as wages for his betrayal, that terrible money, that blood money, burns in his pocket. He no longer wants to keep it. He hurries to the temple. And so it happened, boys and girls, that he stands before these chief priests in the early morning hour. "I have sinned, in that I have betrayed the innocent blood." Do you hear it? He says, innocent blood. Even the betrayer, Judas, declares publicly that Jesus is guiltless. He stares at the chief priests with wild eyes, eyes which plead for comfort, for support. What will their answer be? Will they try to rescue Jesus upon this confession? Perhaps Judas hoped they would, but they do nothing of the kind. They listen to Judas with cold, hard faces. No compassion fills their hearts. They do not try to comfort Judas. They do not encourage him. On the contrary, hard-heartedly and cruelly their answer rings out, "What is that to us? See thou to that." They mean thereby, "We have nothing to do with that. What you have done lies for your own reckoning. You are responsible for your own actions." How unmerciful, isn't it? And these men are supposed to be the leaders of the Jewish people. They are their shepherds and teachers. It doesn't seem much like it. Here's a person in difficulty. Instead of them trying to help him, they roughly and cruelly push him away. And then, oh look, Judas takes the money which these rulers had given him and throws it at the feet of these distinguished chief priests. He will not keep it in his possession for another moment. Momentarily, he stands and stares wildly about, after which he quickly turns and hurries away. He no longer can bear to remain in the temple. He cannot stand it anywhere. Jesus is condemned and must die. It is his fault. Remorse follows him wherever he goes. Nowhere can he find comfort. Nowhere can he see deliverance. He again sees the kind look of his master. He again hears his words, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" He shudders from these thoughts. He shivers as if he has a fever. See him hurrying outside. He runs up a hill. He cannot bear the gnawing voice of his awakened conscience. In utter desperation, he hangs himself. He seeks forgetfulness in death. We do not know how it happened, but he fell into an abyss, and there in the depth he was broken to pieces upon the hard rocks. Did the rope break in which he hung himself upon? Did the rope come loose? We do not know, but we do know that his bowels gushed out upon the earth. Such a dreadful end, isn't it? He thought to find forgetfulness, but he was mistaken, for after this deed of desperation, he had to appear before God's dreadful judgment seat to render an account of his actions. Oh, boys and girls, we should shudder when we think of the dreadful end of the betrayer. For him, it became eternal night. But he was responsible for his wicked deeds. He purposely betrayed his master. He was warned more than once. However, he would not hearken to this kind voice. In blind hatred, he went on. He knew better, but he wanted to cool his rage. This is also a serious warning for us. Pray to God that he will prevent you from being a suicide, because there is no hope for a self-murderer. In utmost astonishment, the chief priests in the temple watched him go. They looked at each other and drew up their shoulders scornfully. They picked up the money which was thrown down on the ground at their feet. Undecidedly, they stand together for a moment. What must they do with this money? They cannot lay it in the treasury of the temple again, for it is the price of blood. Do you know what? They will buy a field with it. It sometimes happens that a stranger dies in Jerusalem. From now on, these strangers can be buried in that piece of land. They will make a cemetery of it. Because this field was bought with the blood money of Judas, the Jews called this field Aseldama. This means the field of blood. They do not take notice that thereby is fulfilled what the prophet Zechariah foretold long ago. Do you want to know what Zechariah said? No, I will not tell you. Read it yourself. You can find it in Zechariah 11, verses 12 and 13. Do it, do you hear? Word for word, the prophecies about the Lord Jesus are all being fulfilled.